On this week's show, it was a real highlight to be able to sit down with local football legend and revered Premiership coach Ned Perry to speak about his journey through life and football. Ned gives us an honest, open account of his journey, including successes, failures, philosophies and things he's learnt not just about himself, but also about being a leader and the pressures coaches face in dealing with so many facets of football. A fascinating part of our chat's when Ned talks about self-doubt and times where he doubted his ability and a time when he was actually ready to chuck it in. This flies in the face of the bulletproof shoot from the hip reputation he has, but it serves again as a great reminder that everyone has their demons they need to conquer to achieve success. Ned also opens up about being diagnosed with cancer while he was still coaching, which not many would know, and how this affected him and how it's changed his outlook on life. We get stories many wouldn't know, good and bad, from the coalface of football clubs Ned's been involved in, and anyone who knows Ned knows he gives his opinions without fear of backlash, as that's how he's been over his journey. There's much, much more in this chat, and anyone that's in a leadership position, make sure you've got your notebooks ready. Talk
hard! I was like, of course I'm not going to walk again. Like, that's just the reality, isn't it?
And the doctor that rang Mum said, oh, we've saved your son's life.
And I remember looking up and just saying, that wasn't out. And he looked at me and he said, no, it wasn't. But I didn't want to give you not out because you're my son. And I said, fuck me, Dad.
I just remember her telling us, your daughter's got leukemia.
During school, I always swapped class a couple times.
Who's cluier out of the two?
Both got the same smartness. Not real smart at all.
If you are dedicated to something, as long as it's safe and it's not hurting anyone else, I don't think anything should hold you back.
Keep pushing forward, you know. Days get tough sometimes. You know, it does turn around. You just gotta fight for it a little bit.
I was like, why can't we be that 1% that survived? She said to me then, she goes, you were more like me than I ever realised.
The Talk Hard Podcast with Brendan Hingston.
Ned Perry, welcome to the Talk Hard Podcast.
Thank you very much, Brendan. It's my pleasure to sit with you. You've been persistent. You've been chasing me for well over 12 months now.
It's been a little while, hasn't it?
It has. And look, I've quite enjoyed the vast variety of your podcast over the last 12 months. And
thank you.
I thought I'd jump on board and try and help you and your podcast. I think they're very, very good.
Thanks, mate. No, I appreciate that. And it's interesting that you say about persistence. Like, I know you have been hesitant to come on, and one thing that I think is going to come out a lot in our chat, and one thing that a lot of people are going to learn about you, is you had a little bit of self-doubt about coming on, didn't you? And a little bit of sort of anxiety about whether or not you could do it and whether anyone would be interested in your story.
I did, because, look, I'm just a football coach. I've been, I don't say that derogatorily, but there are other people out there that work in the health industries and all that type of thing. That I was just happened to be a football coach, and look, if I can part on some information or tell a story, you know, I will. But my story's not that great, really.
No, mate, I think you're selling yourself pretty short, and I think you'll find that out as we go along. But it is interesting, I think, as I said, like a lot of people that listen to the podcast, I like them to actually learn something about the person. And one thing that people wouldn't realise about you is that you do have self-doubts, and obviously, you know, you have your demons and your struggles and things as well. But it's interesting, you know, initially when I decided was I going to go after you to try to get you on the podcast, is I had self-doubt and I was actually nervous about approaching you, because you actually have quite a big presence on the Northwest Coast, you know, and a lot of people wouldn't realise that you too have, you know, struggles with different things as well. Like, I was actually nervous about approaching you to come on, so it was quite comforting, I suppose, to know that, you know, someone like you also has, you know, your own little questions that you ask yourself from time to time.
And look, it's funny, as you get older, those self-doubts and those things, look, they flare up more than what you'd imagine. Like, you'd think that once you turn 60 that, you know, the best part of your life's in front of you, and all your issues and problems and all that, it's all rosy, but it's not. Life's a battle, and there's people out there everywhere that, you know, the world that we live in now, I don't know whether it creates self-doubt, but look, I'm in a good spot now that I've finished my coaching career. I'm in a better spot now than what I was, you know, 4 years ago.
Yep.
I enjoy what I do now. I've got a very, very good balance, and I'm really happy in life.
Awesome. That's the main thing, mate. It is a journey, isn't it? Like, it's not all rosy. Like, everyone has their challenges that they go through, but
they do.
You just got to keep getting up and keep punching, don't you?
That's exactly right.
Absolutely. So, obviously, we're going to go through your life, but I want to get the important question out of the way first, mate. Where'd you get the nickname Ned? A lot of people wouldn't know that.
I was a bit of a rum when I was younger.
Yep.
My dad's mum and dad lived over at East Devonport, and my dad used to dick me on the bike. from where we lived, just not a kilometre from here.
Yep.
And we'd go over the bridge or across the ferry, and I had a tendency to throw rocks. I'd killed a couple of chooks, and always in a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and Dad said, you remind me of Ned Kelly. So, and look, Ned stuck. I don't get called Dale by many people.
Yep.
It's Ned, and look, it's stuck, and look, I'd much prefer Ned than Dale.
Yeah, you're probably used to it by now. Yeah, anyway. I am. So you're a bit of a bush ranger back in the day, mate, a bit of a scallywag.
I was when I was younger, yes.
So that's worn off now?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So obviously we'll go through your story, mate. So take us back to the start. Whereabouts did you grow up?
Well, look, I grew up in a cul-de-sac off Madden Street.
Yep.
Brought up in a very sport-orientated family.
Yep.
Leon and Darren, we were into football, cricket, basketball, athletics. And we were fortunate enough to grow up in a cul-de-sac where there were 12 other kids our ages.
Yep.
So we played football in the winter, cricket in the summer, athletics. You know, we had the oval painted in the middle of the cul-de-sac. We had goal squares at either end.
Yep.
And we had that bigger following. We were that serious that we used to play other cul-de-sacs.
That was a competition.
In test matches and in football. And look, and that's where we learned to play footy.
Yep.
That's where we learned to play cricket. And that's where we learned to fight.
Yep.
You know, there were many brawls on the corner of William and Madden Street playground.
Yep.
You know, and we played the Madden Crescent Boys. And that's where we learned our craft.
Yep.
And then the mini league was started up by the late Max Mercer when I was, might have been 5 or 6. And I came down to, as many young kids did at that particular time, and I think my first side was the Devils.
Yep.
And then I moved into the Magpies, and that's where I fell in love with the Magpies and the black and white jumper.
Yep.
So we played mini league, not Auskick, but mini league, and so many divisions, so many numbers. You got to remember too, Rendon, that I was brought up, and we were brought up back then, no internet, no mobile phones.
Yep.
It was out playing. It wasn't sitting in front of computers. So we were out and about. But mini league was a great stepping stone. And then obviously high school football, primary school football at that particular time was strong. So I went to Devonport Primary. We played against Nixon Street and St Brendan's and Latrobe and Ulverston. Got picked in a couple of Northwest sides and state sides, and then went to high school, played with Devonport in grade 7 and grade 8. And then moved to Devonport in grade 9. So the stepping stones were there. We had depth of players. We had lots of kids playing footy, and it was massive.
Yep.
But as I said, it's a different world now, simply because we just didn't have any modern technology back then. It was sport, and that's what involved for us. And as a person, I loved football.
Yep, I was going to ask you that. So why was it footy that you gravitated to? Was that the one that you were best at, or you just had the most interest in it?
I didn't like basketball much. I played it, but I didn't like it. But I just loved the football.
Yep.
And look, my first memories of football, other than playing, it was getting in my grandmother's mini minor. She was a life member of Devonport, Beryl Sheehan.
Yep.
And we used to travel from Wynyard to Latrobe and watch every Devonport game. I'd wear my Magpie jumper with the number 6 on the back. Peter McKenna of Collingwood was my favourite player there. Not many would remember Peter McKenna.
Yep.
So he was a champion full forward of Collingwood in the 70s. And look, I can remember Nan chewing on the juicy fruit we'd go through. I'd carry my little autograph book, and I'd go to every Devonport game, and I'd get the autographs of every player every week. So, and then the home game, I'd go down and I'd be there before the under-19. So I'd watch the under-19s run out. I'd watch the seconds and I'd watch the scene. And I'd watch the games. I wouldn't run around and jump in the hedges or up and down the grandstand.
Yep.
I'd actually sit and watch every game. So I grew up loving and following Devonport. And I consider myself very lucky because I played with Devonport, but I also coached them. So I feel really lucky now that my career's over.
Mm. And it's interesting that you say from a young age you actually sat and watched the game, you know, obviously because you transitioned later on into coaching, but you must have had a fascination with, you know, how different strategies unfolded and this player's being moved there and they're going to put him onto this bloke and different things like that. You're sort of picking that up early?
Well, football back then was just one-on-one. It was six, like a bit similar to what they're trying to bring into the game now. But I just love watching the game. I like the players kicked. And, you know, I can remember going into the sheds down here when Darryl Borlaug was coaching Latrobe. they played Burnley, and I went in, I seen Ricky McLean, and he was a big man, a big muscly man, and I was a 10-year-old kid. And then I listened to Darryl Baldock talk, and I just sat there stunned the way that he spoke and delivered what he wanted the players to do. And those are the little things that I never forget. I just grew up loving football more.
Yep.
My dad was a Hawthorn supporter, and Dad used to go to Melbourne a lot, and he'd bring back the AFL jumpers, and Leon, Darren and I would we put those jumpers on and play footy. So it was a real part, it was a real fabric of for us growing up.
Yep. You talk about Peter McKenna, he played for Devonport, didn't he, at one stage?
He did.
How big a thrill was that for you?
Absolutely, it was tremendous. I can remember coming down, and Devonport put a training run on that particular day that he came over, came to Devonport, and he had a session one-on-one with David Jago. David Jago was a great fullback for Devonport many, many years ago, and there were thousands out there watching Peter McKenna. He was a terrific player.
Yep.
Got bashed up a fair bit back then, because that's what football was like, but he was a great player for Devonport.
Mm. Yeah, it sort of seems to be the way that it was, wasn't it? They come down here, the big name players, and they sort of get knocked around a little bit, don't they?
But he was terrific for Devonport. I used to love watching Peter McKenna.
Yeah, excellent. And you said you got an early taste of success yourself. Did you have any other legends that you were running around with back in the day that you played footy with?
Growing up... I was involved in the league when the Ricky Browns and the Jared Innes, all the guys that played with Devonport, they followed the same program and stepping stones that I did.
Yep.
The Rudy Gillams, and there were a lot of players back then, but it was just the participation and the depth of players back then that really made it strong.
Mm.
And it brought the best out of people. And when you went to footy clubs, that you had to be loyal, you had to be committed, you had to be respected, and they were the pillars of life, I suppose, that we grew up with, because they were the foundations of football clubs back then.
Yep.
Simply because they didn't tolerate dickheads, or they didn't tolerate guys that weren't toeing the line, because of the depth of the player back then, they were able to kick you out. But unfortunately, the situation now with a lot of clubs is they can't do that. They want to survive, so they've got to keep those types of players there.
Yeah, they haven't got the numbers.
No, they haven't got the numbers.
Yeah, times have certainly changed, haven't they? One other thing that I found out through talking to you there before, so you were a pretty good athlete from a young age. You were a good cross-country runner as well, weren't you?
I was. Football. I won three cross-country championships.
Yep.
I've still got the mile record at Denwood High. I broke that in 1974. I think I ran 4:26. I think I was under 14s that time, and I beat the guy that ran in the open time that year. So I did train and run under the great Herbie Smith, the late Herbie Smith, who used to be down here at Devonport. So I ran with the Viv Woodwards and the Stan Baileys and the Lee Taylors of the world. I used to love long distance running there. More often than not, I'd get up and run 5 or 6 k's before a game of football. So I certainly did like to run.
Yep. So there's never an ambition to go into running? Or
I always look to play senior footy with Devonport and to win the Burnie Mile, but I never continued on with my with my running.
Tick one of them off.
Yeah.
So your introduction to the Devonport Footy Club, so in the under-19s, you played in a premiership in 77, is that right?
I did. Terry Bill coached that side, and Terry Bill was a major influence on me and all those players that played under him. Billy was a real... he was a hard ass. I'd never trained as hard any time anywhere other than underbelly. Of a Sunday, I'll give you an example. Mark Baker, great player for Denver, 81 and 88 premiership player, 10 minutes late for training. Bakes come in, and Bakes being honest, why are you late? Oh, I fell asleep in front of the fire. We had to do 20 extra laps for training.
Wow.
Yeah, there were Sundays where we were doing 20 James Street hill sprints. It was Sundays after a game of footy, we're going out to Don Heads. He was phenomenal. He was strict and hard, but a great communicator. Mm. And look, he brought the Devonport under-18s from the bottom of the scrap heap. I think we played off in a couple of premierships when you'd beat us 1 year, and I think we turned the tables the next. But he was a great coach and a great mentor for me growing up.
Yeah. You talk about him being a hard ass. Do you think there's still a place for that in modern coaching, or has time sort of changed? You've got to be more of a man manager, people manager now?
Well, Ask David Noble. Like David, yeah. David Noble spoke the truth, and you know, it was probably the start of it, the door opening for him. There's got to be a place for honesty in football, and players will tell you at the start of the year, "Listen, Ned, all I want you to do is to be honest with me." Well, some players they want to hear the truth, but a lot of times they don't want the truth, mm-hmm. and so you've got to find a fine line. But look, many of it's changed now than what it was 25 years ago, but you still get that bake. Oh, probably not at local level as much, but at AFL level, when you're a contracted player and you're on big bucks and you're not performing, the coach is quite within his right to shut the door out of the public view and give you what you really need.
Give you a good cook, yeah. And obviously we'll talk about your coaching strategies and philosophies a bit later on when we get into that, but we're just going back to your playing career. So you were a senior player at Devonport there for a few years.
I was. Yeah. Look, I didn't play as many games as I wanted to.
Yep.
Couple of reasons. Wasn't good enough. Devonport had a really good team back in the 80s. We won one flag, and I don't think it's bitter in me saying this. Probably should have won more with the list that we had. Went down a couple of wrong tracks when I was younger. Didn't accept honest feedback.
Yep.
Couldn't accept honest feedback. But look, I played in a really good era. I got back on track in 81. Played the last senior game against East Launceston. I think I kicked 3 or 4 goals that day. I suffered a hernia injury and I kept on playing up. My stomach kept on poking out and I couldn't run and uncomfortable, that type of thing. So I missed the last game of the year. I kicked 3 goals the week before against East Launceston. We played Penguin in the second semi-final at West Park and the coach at the time came up to me and said, "Look, if it's raining, we'll play you. If it's dry, we're going to play a taller player." Yep, no problems. That was the hottest day of the year. It was 28, 20. It was a really hot day. Devonport had a good win. I played in reserves, had a good game, and got told after the game, come to training, you're in the senior squad, and you're going to be okay. But unfortunately, they brought another player in who hadn't played for quite a while, and this player was a great player, Dane Gillon, great player. But I wasn't told.
Yep.
I wasn't told that. I was told 10 days earlier that you were going to play and then wasn't informed that week. And that, look, it really rocked me. It really did, because Devonport was my club. But, look, they won the flag and it was great. And, but, look.
Did you go to the game?
I did. Yeah, I played it. We played in the reserves that we made the final. I think we might have got beat. I'm not real sure. But the seniors won. Great night. And, yeah, it took me a little while to get over that. A young kid, immature. But, look, I should have played more games. Didn't apply myself through a couple of years there. Went the wrong direction. But, look, Devonport were a very, very good side then. And, look, it's just the way it was.
Did you carry it with you, the fact that you weren't told? Did you carry a bit of bitterness?
I did. I did for a few years. And it was a point that I took into my coaching. That when I played, I got to a stage where I used to go to training and I couldn't enjoy training. I couldn't enjoy football because I was too frightened to make a mistake because I wanted to play seniors that much.
Yep.
So it was something that I learnt that when I went into coaching, and if I could see a young guy coming in and trying to make his way, I'd go up and say, "Listen, Brendan, you got 6 weeks. Make mistakes, it doesn't matter. Train hard.
Just back him.
Respect yourself. Respect your teammates. You got 6 weeks."
Yep.
Just to let him unload and enjoy 6 weeks. At the end of 6 weeks, we sit down and have a chat. But that was one lesson that I learned.
Yep.
That you've got to enjoy your football to play your best football. And I couldn't at that particular time because I was too worried about playing a senior football. I couldn't. Anyway, but that's something that I learned going forward.
Yep. And talking about lessons learned, like the fact that you sort of were told that you were missing out, is that something that you sort of
I was never told. And again, any player that was omitted, however tough the call was, they were told.
Yep.
And I was never told. Okay. Never given an explanation.
Yep.
And yeah.
So how did you find out?
Look, back then, you either heard it on the radio or he got up the next morning and read it in the paper.
Okay, yep.
So, yeah.
And I was going to say, is that something that you took into your coaching, though, being honest and letting players know as soon as you could?
Absolutely. And that's not saying that the coach at that particular time wasn't honest.
Yep.
But he never came up to give me feedback. And no matter how tough feedback is, it's got to come from the coach.
Yep.
And I can honestly say that I can walk around anywhere in Tasmania, and if I see a player that I coach coming down the street, I don't have to duck into any doorway because, oh, shit, here comes Brendan. I dropped in and didn't tell him. I can always walk up to any players that I've coached. And there are some players that I've coached ignore me, don't have anything to do with me because they've been dropped. One particular player doesn't speak to me. I can be sitting here a distance from you talking to other people. He just ignores me because he was dropped. Now, he got dropped from the grand final, but sometimes players don't realise it's just as hard for a coach to go and drop a player and tell him, look, you're not playing in the grand final, as what it is to drop the player. For the player, it's extremely hard.
Yep.
You know, there are many, many nights that I had nights where I couldn't sleep because I had to drop a player. I had to tell someone that they were going to miss out on something that was their dream, like me. And it's bloody tough.
Yeah.
It's really tough.
Who were the hardest ones to drop, did you find? Like, was it the ones that had sort of busted their ass and you knew that they had every right to be disappointed?
I never dropped anyone that busted their ass. I never dropped anyone that gave effort. I dropped one particular player. He was a senior player. And like I said, I went up to him and I said, look, we're not going to play you this week. These are the reasons. Your form hasn't been good. He said, well, I've only played 4 bad games at this footy club. And I said, well, I've been the last 4 weeks in.
Yeah.
You know, I dropped Mark Lowe. Now, Mark Lowe's a great player at Devonport. He was a great leader. I dropped Mark Lowe. I dropped Adam Jeffrey at Latrobe. He's in the purple patch, but didn't make a Sunday morning training. I dropped Adam Jeffrey. That's tough. You know, I've dropped Nick Von Chill in 2 grand finals, one at Devonport and one at Latrobe.
Yep.
Bloody tough. And Nick Von Chill's a 5-star man. It's just tough.
Mm.
It's really, really tough. People don't understand the pressures that a local coach is under, because I'm dealing with, coaches are dealing with players who you played with, who you played with their fathers, or yep. They could be your friend's grandson or your auntie's nephew. It's really, really hard because there's always a connection at local footy, and it's extremely hard as a local coach. That's why many, Brendan, don't last more than 2 years, 3 yep. years.
Because the emotional strain that they carry.
It's phenomenal. You know, you see these coaches at AFL level and VFL level. Well, yeah, they've got pressure, but I see a lot of the AFL coaches, they don't come back and take charge of their list until February,
yep.
Where the local coach here, you've got to work out a weight program, a recovery programs. You know, he's got to worry about sponsors. He's got to worry about how Brendan's feeling about being dropped round 2, injuries. It's a whole mega. It's like being a triathlete. You've got to be good in all different parts of the game. And
yep.
In the end, that's what wore me out. Especially at Devonport in my last stint in 2007, I was tired. And there was a lot of things that just wore me out.
Yeah, and we'll touch on that. But just going back to your playing career, one thing a lot of people wouldn't realise is you played up in Queensland for a year, didn't you? How did that come about?
I did. Look, I had to probably get out of Devonport at that particular time. I was in a rut, doing what young kids do, and I needed to get out of home and go up and stand on my own 2 feet.
Yeah. So you're a bit of a hellraiser, were you?
A little bit. And that, back then, you know, that's what we did. Drink and fight and carry on. So I went to Mackay. There was an ad in the paper. Players wanted, but it was Bakers Creek. And I went up there in early March of 83 and looked very fortunate enough to find work up there at a place called Hay Point. So I was up there for 12 months sandblasting and spray painting, a big coal stack of reclaimers, massive money up there. So that 12 months, or 16 months, really set me up You know, come back and bought a house, and yeah, so I really enjoyed that 12 months away. Met different people,
yep.
Seen a different culture. Just football up there was completely different.
I was going to ask you that because that's obviously pre, you know, Brisbane Bears and that sort of thing. So the AFL in Queensland would have been a bit of a novelty, wouldn't it, back in those days?
It was. I can remember making the Mackay Rep side. We were the Crows. We went to Townsville and we played under the mountain up there. And Townsville was a big army barrack town. And we'd run out, Mackay had run out, and then Townsville had come out. They were big. They all looked like Arnold Schwarzeneggers. It was 35 degrees, and I think we might have got pumped that day. It was hot, and it was a game, but I'll never forget.
How scary is it in this day and age how much we rely on modern technology? It's not till your phone dies or the Wi-Fi or power goes off that you realise you'd be lost without it. Well, recently my phone decided in its old age to die and stop charging, and on a weekend no less. So what do? Rather than waiting to speak to the network providers or retail outlets, which can be painful within itself, give Brad or Katie a call at Greenies Apple Repairs. That's what I did, and they had my old phone as good as new in hours. Greenies take care of iPhones, iPods, iPads, and pretty much everything else, and they won't cost you an arm and a leg. So next time you're stuck back in the dark ages with no technology, contact Greenies Apple Repairs on 0401 229 220, or you can contact them at www.greeniesrepairs.com.au or find them on Facebook. Now just to get onto this busted screen. And so then you decided to come back to Devonport, so you weren't going to stay up there for a long time? It was just to get out and break the cycle a little bit?
Look, the work ran out, and look, this is how luck transpires. Every day I used to go to the railway yards to see whether there's any work, and I'd go every morning at 6 o'clock. Any work? No, not today, mate. I'd done that for 3 weeks, and then my wife now, Janine, and I, we said we're going to go back. She resigned from a job and packed up. And one Monday morning, there was a knock on the door. It was a guy from the railway station. He said, "Look, there's a job going at the Queensland Rail. Would you be interested?" I said, "Oh, look, it's too late. I've sold all my furniture, going back on, leaving on Thursday." So that was that point of time. But look, I'm glad it happened. Janine and I drove back down, and we got back, I think it was 84. I had a year with Devonport in 84.
Yep.
And got a job in the dairy industry. And that, through the dairy industry, I had to work. I used to only get one Saturday off in five. So actually gave up. Over the summer of 84, going into 85, I said, "Look, I can't play footy because I've got to work." But I was talking to a guy at my wedding, and he was involved with a club called Olsen Districts,
yep,
which are East Olsen now.
Yep.
And he said, "Look, would you be interested in having a kick?" I said, "Look, I've got to play. I've got to work on a Saturday." He said, "Well, we don't start till 2 o'clock. And I was working from 4:30 in the morning to 2 o'clock of a Saturday afternoon. So in the end, look, I did play, and what used to transpire was my wife used to pick me up from the milk factory out at Sprayton, and I'd be getting changed in the car going to the football. So I done that for 6 or 7 years, and I'm glad I did because it allowed me to stay in the game that I loved.
Yep.
And yeah, so I'm really happy that occurred.
Yep. And so how many years did you have at Olsen District? Because then you moved on to Wesley Vale.
I did. I had 2 years at Olsen Districts.
Yep.
And then Des Webb, a great neighbour of mine and a great friend, lives 3 doors up from me, got the job at Wesley Vale. And he came down, knocked on my door and said, "Look, would you come out to Wesley Vale and play?" And I said, "Yep, no problems." And look, I went out there and I finished my career out there. I retired from playing in 1994.
Yep.
That was my last year. And, yeah, so that's where I spent the last part of my playing career.
Yeah. And obviously while you were at Wesley Vale, that's when you moved into your coaching. But I just wanted to ask you just a couple of things about you as a player. What sort of player were you? How would you describe yourself?
At Wesley Vale, yeah, or in the country?
Yeah.
I was an on-baller. Yep. I played on-ball. My greatest strength was my ability to run all game. I don't really like to talk about it. I suppose there are a lot of opponents out there that would, they'd probably tell you more than what I would. But yeah, I acquitted myself okay.
Yep. And when did coaching sort of come on the radar? When did it start to become an ambition for you?
Look, I don't think you start out to be a coach.
Yep.
if you get the opportunity, you either sink your teeth into it or you just flick it off. It was just a one-off experience. But end of 89, we won a premiership and Des Webb had resigned from the job. Brendan Chern took the job on, but because of work commitments in February, Brendan couldn't go through with the role. And I'd just won the best and fairest. And look, back then in those days, if you won the best and fairest, you know, you'd always seem to come the next coach. So they came and see me late in February of 1990 and said, would you take the job on? And it was a big job because we'd won the premiership and we'd lost, I think, over a dozen players from that premiership side. So
yep. And they sort of gone back into the NTFL?
Just retired, moved on. And, okay. And look, I think you still see a lot of that. Sides in the country win premierships and then all of a sudden we look at fourth.
Yeah.
Last year premierships and now floundering at the bottom, unfortunately for those loyal volunteers at clubs. Players go and come, and they can come and win your premiership, but they can go pretty quickly and bring you back down to the despairs. But I took it on, and I think we might have finished fourth in 1990. We were beaten in the grand final in 91 by a very, very good Ulston District side that had the Creswell brothers in it, a lot of players from Ulston. So, and football in the country was very, very strong there. Continued to coach them in 92 and 93. Made finals at both those years. In 94, Kevin Parker, the Sheffield Premiership coach, put his hand up, and I had a year under Kevin. And then the following year, that's when I went and coached the statewide league at Devonport in the underage.
Yep. So those early years in coaching, sort of when you look back now, do you look back at yourself as a coach then and think, geez, I wish I had done that better or I had known that? Can you think of like mistakes and things or what sort of coach you tried to be then that you might change now?
Oh, look, you learn on the job. And look, back in when I started, there were some really good coach education courses. I can remember Stan Owls, Alan Jeans. There was other type of players come over, Kevin Cheedy, and used to go to those coaching forums. But it was, you know, the senior players, like when I had at Wesley Vale, I had Kim Holland as a senior player, and we used to talk and discuss. But, yeah, it's really hard. Back in the country back then, we didn't have the problem with no numbers. But it was just, yeah. And then when I, Wesley Vale was a great platform for me because, you know, coaching a country club, yeah, you was a doctor, you was a strapper at times, you used to have to make sure the footballs were pumped up, and psychiatrist, it was everything. So I learnt a lot of the tools that were going to hold me in good stead further up the track. So, but when I got into coaching, I did enjoy it. And when I started to think, well, where do you want to go with your coaching? It was always my dream to coach Devonport.
Yep.
That was my dream because I love Devonport. So I spoke to a guy involved with Devonport at the time, very high up, and he said to me, where do you want to go with your coaching? So I want to coach Devonport. Well, you're not going to coach Devonport if you sit here in the country. You know, this has been a really good platform for you. What you need to do now is you need to find a job where you're going to learn to develop players. Mm-hmm. And at that particular time, the Devonport underage job was coming up. The coach at the time was moving on to the mainland. So I came down and watched a couple of games that Devonport played, thinking, you know, see what it was like. They were abysmal, undisciplined, and I said to myself, well, I'd like to get hold of this group. So Andy Goodwin was coach of Devonport at the time, and they put an ad out for our underage coach, and I went through that process and got it. So in 95, we might have won two games, but we lost seven games by under 10 points. 96 and 97, we were premiers. So we went from being the worst underage side in the state to the best.
Yeah.
And we had such a good side in 96 and 97, we had a really good system. That we were able to beat the Wesley Vales and the East Olsons and those sort of sides in practice matches. The summer.
Yep.
You know, Brady Rawlings, Kurt Hazelwood, Mark Lowe, Adam Flannery, Sam Astle, Cameron Blight. These were the players that were coming through at that stage. We had massive numbers, 50 plus of training. So it was we had a really good committee that went out in the high schools, and our junior development program then was better than any in the state. They'd get notebooks and programs, and it was a really well-run competition. It was probably the best 3 years of my life. That was the 3 years, 95, 96, 97, that I enjoyed more than any, sitting back and looking back now, that they were the 3 years that I enjoyed the most.
Yep.
In my career.
What would you put that down to? Why did you enjoy them the most?
Look, it was a time in my life where I used to bring my son down to training, and he'd love to training. And then Neil Cummings, a massive influence on me, Neil Cummings, a former Devonport and Glenorchy Premiership, great Tasmanian player. He gave me a lot of assistance at Devonport. He was my assistant coach. Just the people and watching the young kids, I just loved it. And I was able to train with them, and it was just a really good time.
Yep. Were you sort of evolving or changing as a coach, would you say? Or were your same philosophies from the country you're sort of still putting into place then?
As I said, you move. My training changed as I evolved as a coach. I went from a lot of long stuff, a lot of miles. Everyone was running the mile. Everyone was running the 1K time trial. But I was big on high intensity. So I used to want players to come back to training, even though it was hard the next night. So I used to work 4 or 5 minutes of running, hard running, and then back into the ball work. So through the night, we might run 30 or 40 20-second efforts, but all broken down, but they still touch the football a lot. So that was how I used to get them back the next night. But we used to have some really long sessions, When I first started coaching Devonport, it was, 7:30, 8 o'clock most nights. So
And so you could obviously see the talent there in that side, though. Like, is it a coincidence, you think, that it turned around so quick? Did you think that, well, if I get these blokes disciplined and on the right track, they could really go somewhere? Could you see that early?
Well, I was trying to get the best kids from Reece High, Devonport High, St Brendan's, to the Devonport Football Club, because East Devonport were very, very big on their junior development back then, and so too were Latrobe. But Devonport had a great facility. They worked really hard on updating their weight room, and you bring the young kids down and their parents down, and you show them through the facilities, and you'd explain to the player, what I want you to do, and give them programs, and they appreciated that. And Devonport was a great place to come. Parents could drop their kids off and they could come through the door knowing that they were in a good environment, and we had a good underage committee, and they learned how to play football, they learned how to be good people, and it was a really, really enjoyable time.
Excellent. And it's funny when you get that little bit of success. I think I was probably a year or two sort of after that, and I was no good as a footballer, but it was always an ambition. Even me growing up over in Latrobe, you saw that the Devonport under-18s or under-19s were winning flags, so that success creates a pull for other players to want to go there as well.
Absolutely.
You see that in AFL as well, don't you? The cellar dwellers can't attract anyone, but then as soon as the Melbournes, now they start winning flags, now everyone wants to go there. So.
Absolutely.
And just, again, because it's sort of around my age, just talking to a few blokes that played under you, I know that I've heard a few of your pre-game speeches and things, even in senior footy over at Latrobe and stuff, but a lot of them still remember some of your pre-game speeches, even from under-18s. Was that something that you particularly put a lot of emphasis on, what you said to the players before the game to rev them up?
I'll give an example. When I coached sides, I used to go to Smithton. They still laugh about it now. I used to say to the players, we're not going to Mars. We're going to play Smithton at Smithton.
Yep.
If we played Smithton up here today on our home ground, we'd win by 10 goals. So I really don't want us to go down to Smithton and be meek and mild when we're travelling an hour and a half down the coast. We're not going to Mars.
Yep.
Or I used to say to the players, if you wanted to go to Hobart in your car, you woke up one morning and you wanted to go to Hobart. So you jumped in your car and you pulled into the service station. How much petrol would you put in the car? Would you put $5 worth of petrol in? No. Why? Well, you wouldn't get to Hobart. Well, that's right. You're not going to go the journey. So this is why I want you guys to train hard. So we put the miles in the tank, so when we play on a Saturday, we're fueled up. We're ready to go. We're not going to run out. The great Muhammad Ali always used to say the fight was always won and lost before he got in the ring, before he got in the fight.
Yep.
And I just changed that around a little bit. We need to put the petrol in the car so we can go the journey. Yep. Those are the types of little things. And look, I used to get I wanted my, I never wanted to be the best coach, but I always wanted to coach the best team. And I done what I had to do to get the players that I was coaching to be the best they could be.
Yeah. And I reckon if you ask a lot of those players, because a lot of them went on to, you know, pretty successful senior careers, that you would have had a fair impact on them. Did you take a lot of satisfaction in watching them go into senior footy, those guys?
I did.
A lot of them did play even in that era, didn't they? Yep. They'd get experience in seniors.
I did, but I look at them now as men and as fathers, and they've been so successful. They are really good men, really good people in the Devonport community.
Yep.
And that's what I don't say that to them, but when I see a player that I coach come down, I say, look, with his kids, look how he's grown up, terrific. And that means a lot to me.
Yep.
That really does mean a lot to me. I thought when I heard coaches say that years ago, oh, he's only saying that because it sounds good. But it's true. Just to see, you know, pictures of those kids that I've got at home and to what they've transpired into, it's really heartwarming.
Yeah, you've shaped them as men, not just footballers.
Oh, they come from good families.
Yeah,
it's a credit to them. It's a credit to all those guys.
And so from there, then you took on the senior role at East Devonport. Was it hard for you to move away from Devonport? But was it sort of that pull of senior coaching? You wanted to go and get some experience?
And look, it was difficult. Devonport and East, completely two different clubs, and I was going into a different role. So, look, I went to East Devonport in 1998. They were beaten the previous year by Ulverston in a grand final. I think they might have scored only 7 points or something, thrashed by Ulverston, as were most sides back then in that era.
Yep.
And so I took the job on. So, you know, Ben Lillis was the president of East Devonport at that particular time, rang me up and said, can we have a meeting? And we had a meeting and... Look, he talked me into, you know, Ben's been a successful lawyer, a businessman, and he made a lot of sense. So, look, I took the role on. And as I took the role on, there was a change in statewide, and the South Launceston side that played in the statewide league in 1997 was coming back into the Northern Tasmania Football League. So I always knew then they were coached by Dean Chiron, Melbourne Tagger, that they were, whoever beat South Launceston were going to win the flag. So we started, it was a different culture. I took my training methods from Devonport into East Devonport, and took a while to kick in, but look, we did. I think we lost one game for the year. That was a really wet day. I'll tell you how wet it was and cold it was. Chris McGurk, the former state Devonport centre half back, got hypothermia this day. It was that cold. Olsen beat us, I think, by a couple of points.
Yep.
So we went into the final series. South Launceston beat us by about 20 points, I think, in the second semi-final at Trobe. We bounced back and beat Olsen by 3 or 4 points in the pre-final. Very wet day up at Trobe. And then we played South Launceston in the grand final and beaten by 7 points. I think they kicked 7-14. I think we might have kicked 7-8 or 7-7, but I see still when Stephen Milnes bounced the ball in the 2010 grand final. If it bounced the right way, they would have beat Collingwood.
Mm.
We had a similar situation in 98 where the ball bounced the wrong way for a particular player, and if you picked it up, goal would have been in front. But they kicked the ball out and they went coast to coast and they kicked a goal and got 7 points up. So beaten in 98. It was really hard. But I always thought then, I'm destined to finish second because, you know, I'd finished second in quite a few BNFs at Wesley Vale and finished second here. And it took a lot out of it. It took a lot out of the players because the club hadn't been successful since 1988.
Yeah.
And we got so close, but just couldn't quite get over the line. Beaten by a side that come back from the state league that had won 8 games the previous year. So they weren't the cellar dwellers in the statewide league. They still had. And look, the way South Launceston come back, they changed the way footy played. The Ulmers, Scott Harris, the late Matthew Westfield, good players, really good players.
Yeah.
Big Bobby Hatfield, you know. So they were a very good side.
Mm, yeah, it's no shame to lose to a side like that, is it?
No, there wasn't.
Yeah. And so you only had 1 year at East, didn't you? And then you moved on again.
Probably showed a little bit of immaturity in a 98. Things didn't go the way that I wanted them to go. There's a little bit of turmoil over at East Devonport. And I was asked to go to join the Tassie Mariners. Glenn Frame and I grew up together. Glenn was the coach of the Tassie Mariners that particular time, and asked would I join the coaching panel up on the coast with David Cashin. And look, that's what I've done. That was another step in my journey, I suppose. I was involved with some elite juniors, and you know, I travelled with the Mariners interstate, and that was a really good learning curve. Glenn Frame was really good. You know, I learned a lot about team meetings and learned a lot about recovery and, you know, a lot learned a lot about doing your homework on oppositions and all that type of thing. So I got a lot out of that. And then the Denmore job come up at the end of 99, and I had to go through the process.
Yeah. How big a thrill was that for you when you heard that that job was coming up and you were half a chance of getting it?
Well, in 99, the Denmore under Richard Spencer had only won one game. And it's not Spencer's fault, but statewide league had started to wane. At the end of 98, I think that was the end of statewide league. It really started to peter off after 98. Unfortunately, Spence came in 99. And then at the end of 99, I put in for the job, but there was a couple of stumbling blocks on the interview panel. There were a couple that didn't appreciate the fact that I left Devonport at the end of 97.
Mm-hmm.
Went to East Devonport and then took four or five players with me. So there was a little bit of angst there. But the selection panel had a criteria and questions your mark out of 10. And I happened to finish on top of the list. And
were there many other candidates?
There were three other candidates.
Yep.
And so I got through, and the person that didn't want me there called me up, and we went and sat in his office, and he said, "This is the reasons why I didn't want you there." And I said, "No, that's fine." And I realised that I had to gain his respect. And look, I had a really good relationship with Neil Wilkerson. Neil Wilkerson was the man. Neil Wilkerson was fantastic for me in the 7 years, 8 years that I was coach at Devonport. Neil got a lot of flack for the position that Devonport was in. But look, Neil and a lot of other people done what they thought was best for the football club at that particular time. So I got the job in 2000. Now, they'd won one game the previous year. I took a club on that was $775,000 in debt.
Mm.
I took a club on that won one game, and we'd lost five of the first five place getters in the best of fairest set year. So I had a shell of a side. And look, that was no disrespect to the past left. They got tired of playing in a sterile statewide league, and they didn't want to get pumped every week. So they went back to their clubs, and, you know, at the time I was disappointed, but I could understand it. So I had kids. Now, the kids brought their families, and all these kids had really good families. So we built the football club from a social aspect up. But there's two sides of playing kids. Now, I had to play kids before they were ready. Now, when you play a debutant, he brings, you know, new flair and he brings enthusiasm. That's fine. But the other side of playing kids before they're ready is that they haven't deserved their spot to play senior football. And the situation down the track that I ran into was that there were times where you had to come up to these players after 30, 40 games and say, "I'm going to drop you this week, Brendan. You're lacking this area." And they take it to heart because they became senior players at a young age, and they thought that they were senior players for life.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't understand that after 30 or 40 games, areas that you needed to work on haven't been fixed, and you're going to go back and try and fix that at a lower level. And that's a double sword that I faced going through Devonport in the early ages.
Yep.
In the early stages, the fact that I had to play the kids because I had nothing else, and they played senior footy before they were ready, before they deserved it. And then when the time come to have some truth told them, it caused some angst.
Yeah. And so just for you, though, just actually getting that role with Devonport, like, did you sit back? Was that like a massive thrill for you because it was such a goal? Did you sit back and reflect on it at all, or were you just straight onto the job?
At the time, I couldn't because my dad was... Dad never seen me coach Devonport, which is really disappointing. My dad was an East Devonport player, but supported me and my brothers and everything to be done. I got the job late October of 99. Dad passed away in November of 99. So But Dad knew that I'd been appointed coach at Devonport, and he was really pleased. He said, you give it your best shot. Yeah. And, give it your best shot, Ned. And unfortunately, he didn't get to see me coach Devonport, but he knew I was appointed coach at Devonport.
Yeah. And that first year with Devonport, you were in the statewide league, but then in 2001, then they dropped back into the NTFL, yeah. Didn't they? So talk about that time and the decision to do that.
Well, 2000, my first game I coached Devonport was against Burnie Dockers. They had the great Mick McGuan coaching Burnie, and Graham Wright playing with Burnie. I think we might have kicked 2 goals, something, that game. Burnie might have kicked 14 or 15 goals. And that's how it was through the year. We were a young side. But look, never ever doubted their commitment to play for the jumper or play for me or play for their teammates. We just weren't ready. Just had too many players that just weren't big and bold and ready to be able to put what we had to put forward. And then look, at the end of 2000, Burnie jumped up and said, we're out. Devonport joined, we're out. And we went back into the NWFL. And look, that was tough because everyone expected Devonport to come back and dominate. Well, we were in a different position than what Burnie were. Burnie went on to win 5 premierships in a row. Well, they kept the core of their players when they came back. They were big. They were good players.
Yeah.
We were young. We played our first game against Smithton. I think we might have won that. Deloraine, we might have won that. Then we went to Wingard. And my centre line that day, because there was a story in the Advocate that Devonport thrashed Wingard, you know, this and this. And our centre line that day consisted of Ben Reynolds, someone else, and they played a total of 5 senior games between them.
Yep.
So 2001 was a real learning curve for us, but it made the players. So from 2000 and into 2001, we were training in October. We started back training in October, and because we were the worst side in the competition, and I just thought, well, if we're the worst side in the competition, we're going to be the first back of training. And the players just lapped it up.
Yep.
They were hard workers, and away we went. And we suddenly, not suddenly, but we progressed every year.
Yep.
Into a very strong, relevant football club.
Yeah. And did you have many blokes from those under-19 days playing for Devonport at the time? You already had that relationship with them?
Yeah, we did. Mark Lowe, Adam Flannery, Sam Astle. A lot of those young kids too went on to further their careers in work-wise. And Devonport was a place like that where we had a lot of kids used to go to university. But look, good kids. We trained extremely hard. Now, back then, our training regime was play Saturday, recover Sunday, run Monday, train Tuesday, Wednesday, more often than not, they were down here doing weights, train Thursday, Friday off and play Saturday. So, but these guys were at it 5-6 days a week.
Yep.
And they lapped it up, and that's why we've become strong.
When it comes to home renovations, there's nothing more important than getting the kitchen right. So you've got 2 options. Have a crack at it yourself and then get someone else in to fix it, or get the team at Infinite Joinery and Designs in from the start to avoid a lot of stress and dirty looks from the better half. If you're thinking of renovating your kitchen, give Sam and the team at Infinite a call straight away. Specialising in kitchen renovations, they can also take care of new home joinery fit-outs, renovations, laundries, wardrobes. They have 3D design software, and Sam alone has over 20 years' experience in joinery and project management. Find them on Facebook and Instagram, or phone Sam on 0429 291 008, or by email, which is sam@infinitejoineryanddesign.com. So don't be like me, thinking you'll save a few bucks and have a crack at it yourself. Call these guys in so you can sit back and watch the experts go to work. It did turn around pretty quickly, didn't it? Because you're into the preliminary final in 2003, weren't you? So it only took a couple of years to start getting that success.
It did, and what the NWFL gave Devonport an opportunity was, we were able to get back that connection with our town, and our supporters were able to follow us every week. And so, you know, we were getting... when we play Ulverston or Latrobe, 1,200, 1,800 at a local game of footy. And, you know, the players loved it. And it was just wonderful to be able to get up, open your door, get in your car, and 20 minutes later, you'd be a game of footy that Denmark were playing at. So the players really responded to regional football.
Mm. And so obviously the year after that was the first year that you made the grand final in 2004. And obviously, you know, you came up against a couple of pretty good sides in those years. So what learnings did you take out of those 3 years?
Look, every year you come up against a different opposition. Now, this is like people say Devonport underachieved in 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007. But if you really look at it, we'll go through 2004. We finished fifth at the end of the roster series. We just scraped in by about 2%. We were beaten by 87 points last game of the year against Burnie at West Park. Northern Bombers were playing Wynyard at Wynyard. Northern Bombers were in front of us, and all they had to do was beat Wynyard by a big margin. I think they scraped 23 points they had to go beat Wynyard by. So we snuck into the fifth spot on percentage. So, and then we played Latrobe, at Latrobe in the elimination final, coached by Ashley Brown. Now, Ashley Brown was a great player. He was a great leader for Latrobe. Big man, and players were frightened of him, and, he was a good player. Latrobe were 30-odd points up at half-time. We came back after half-time. I think we might have won by mid-20s. Four goals by Grant Birchall after half-time helped, and we beat Latrobe in the elimination final.
Yep.
The following week, we went to Launceston to play South Launceston. Father's Day. 44 points down at some stage in the third term. Launceston had been beaten the day before by Burnie. They obviously came and watched that game because they were going to play the winner. They left at half time and said we're going to play South Launceston. We got up over the line. We beat South Launceston.
Yep.
Came back, played Launceston in the pre-final. We might have kicked 7 or 8 goals in the first term. Launceston come out and tried to rough the pass up. They responded magnificently, kicked 8, and found our way into a grand final. Now, there's no way known that 2004 side underachieved. We finished 5th. That year, I thought that Launceston, Burnie and Latrobe were the best 3 sides.
Yep.
So Launceston and Latrobe were the sides that underachieved. What we'd done was we played really good finals football but come up against a formidable opponent in Burnie. They beat us by 107 points. They were, I classified them back then as a wrecking machine.
Yep.
You know, they were a great football club, coached by a great coach in Nick Probert. But 2004, it enabled the players to feel what grand final football was all about. It gave them an opportunity to, get that close. And the players, into the summer of 2005, we worked harder. And we hit a bit of a crossroad in the middle of 2005. We went down to Wynyard, and we might have been 3 and 4 on the ladder. We just lost some games that we should have lost. And it was a wet, windy Wynyard day. Very fiery game. I think there was an inquest into the game. But we stood up and beat Wynyard, and then we rolled on. So 2005, we got to a final series. Burnie finished on top, and we might have finished 3rd. We played Launceston at Latrobe, and Adam Derbyshire that day kicked 10 goals.
Mm, he was a hell of a player, wasn't he?
He was a champion. We were 28 points down at three-quarter time in a qualifying final. We got up and won by 2 points, hit the lead with about 15 seconds to go. Matthew Lang made, smothered a kick out from fullback, I think, and kicked a point and put us in front. We went down to West Park in 2005, and I said to my assistant coach, Mark Fagan, I said, look, I'm going to tell you something, Fags, but I don't want to get out of this car. We need to make the grand final, otherwise we're not going to get there. I don't think we can beat Launceston again. And that's not doubting the players, that's just knowing my list. So we've gone to Burnie. And Burnie were a great side. Burnie were very good at linking up out of the back half. So we went in with the strategy. We played Darren Benham at centre half forward. A small Darren Benham. Now, Darren Benham was small, but by Christ, he'd compete.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd play 5 players in the goal square. So what that done, it dragged the Burnie players back to the goal square, and Darren Benham was up front. So it didn't matter who they brought up there, Darren Benham would beat them. We had Grant Birchall on the wing. He was tagged by Kay Munday. And we weren't allowed to leave, the players weren't allowed to leave the goal square until the ball since I fought 50. And we talked about that, like, I don't know whether you've watched Braveheart, and they're standing there with the poles.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes, wait,
yeah,
wait, wait. That's what we done through the week. Wait, wait. And when we hit side 50, we had to spread. We had to burst. Well, we cracked open Bernie. They weren't able to get that offensive run, and we beat Bernie in the second semi-final. We made a grand final in 2005. Now, I might have showed all my hands in the second semi-final, but remembering, I said to Mark, I don't know whether we can beat Launceston again. I don't know whether we can, you know, our luck of the dice can roll again. So Bernie played Launceston in a pre-final wet day, and got up, and we played Bernie in the final. And wet day at La Trobe, didn't win the first quarter. They got away from us, and then we pegged it back, missed some easy goals, and got beat by 17 points. So, you know, unlucky, but anyway.
Did they do anything to combat that strategy out of the goal square in that return game?
I couldn't do that again.
Yep.
I couldn't do that again. They probably would have had a strategy in place to do that. But they certainly went in with a different structure in their back six.
Yep.
So, and then the following year, we were only beaten once through the year, 2006. It was a year where I really thought that we were capable of winning.
Is that your best chance that year?
Probably 2005, because people don't realise how good a Launceston side was in 2006.
Yep.
The McKay brothers were very good. Derbyshire, Scotty Stevens, the Finch brothers, they were a great side. 2006, we were beaten in a second semi-final out here at home. We'd won a home final. We finished on top. Oh, I think we might have kicked 8 goals, 20, beaten by 23 points. We come back from 40 points down, but the damage had done, they were classy, Launceston. Won a second semi-final. I think we kicked a record score that day. I think we might have kicked 30 goals against the Northern Bombers, the Rod Coach Northern Bombers. Played Launceston, obviously, in the grand final. Now, sometimes up at La Trobe, especially in September, the wind, you've got to win the toss at La Trobe. Now, Launceston won the toss. They kicked with the breeze. They kicked 7 goals in the opening term. So we went in at quarter time, 7 goals, 2:46. 7 goals, 2:44. I think we might have kicked 2 points. So it was 7 goals down in a grand final. Yeah. Half time, we've gone in, we're 2 points down. So we kicked 7 goals also with the breeze. So after half time, we've come out. Launceston were kicking with the breeze. And 15 minutes into the third quarter, they were kicking with the breeze. We were 4 points down. We made a really costly error 15 minutes out from goal. They kicked out, went coast to coast, and they kicked 4 unanswered goals in 7 minutes. And then the wind started to turn, and they also had the win in the third term. Not using that as an excuse, but that's...
Doesn't help.
That's how, you know, sometimes that's what happens in grand finals. So getting back to what back to start, when people said we underachieved in 4, 5 and 6, we come up against some really good sides.
Mm.
Shouldn't have made it in 04. There were better sides in front of us. Launceston and La Trobe underachieved in 04. 06... 05, made a grand final against Burnie when probably Launceston was the second best side. And then 06, yep, we did win it. We should have grabbed that one. And then in 07, my last year, at the end of 06, the win together, lose together mentality went out the door.
Can you just explain that mentality? What do you put that down to?
Well, when you play finals football, you win together. And if you lose together.
So you don't fraction.
You don't fraction.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that didn't occur in 06. So on the Sunday evening, I received a phone call from a senior player who I respect immensely, because he had the courage to ring me up. Not that the other guys didn't, but they were too frightened too, or they didn't want to break my feelings. He rang me up and said, look, we've had a meeting today. Players, you've lost the players. They think that we've lost 3 grand finals. and we need a new coach to take us to the next level. You know, I spoke to him for a while and said what I had to say and got off the phone and spoke to my wife and, you know, she was really wild. And then I spoke to a person that I used to speak to and he said to me, so you're going to resign over a group of players that wouldn't watch the replay of the grand final a second time because they'd be embarrassed. You're going to step down from a job that you love to accommodate those players. Now, I didn't say that. This bloke said to me, he said that to me. I'd written out my letter of resignation, I give it to him, and that's what he said. So you're going to quit because some players couldn't stand up in a big game. Those players wouldn't. He said to me that some of those players wouldn't watch that game a second time. And look, I thought about it and I ripped up my resignation. I went and seen Neil Wilkerson. And I coached again in 2007. So we lost a lot of players at the end of 2006.
Do you put it down to that reason?
Oh, probably. Yeah. Look, there is a time frame for a local coach. There's no doubt about that. I've got no qualms with any of those players. Like, you know, I still see them now and say g'day. So, but that's what it was back then. So in 2007, we embarked on a really big program with the young kids. I brought in young Kristen Higgs, Corey Pumbridge, Sam Whittison. We recruited a couple of young kids from Penguin. We got Brad McDonald from Glenorchy, great player Brad McDonald, and we started again. We set out again. Went through the season, lost only one game to the well-coached Max Brown side in Ulverston, over at Ulverston. We've gone into a final series, again, won a home final. And unfortunately, before that final, there was a massive big blue. We'd come out and Launceston were warming up down our end. And we've come out after half, before the game, and some of the players didn't like it. And there was a melee that went on and on and on. It wasn't a push and shove, it was a really wild melee. And unfortunately, we didn't recover from that. And Launceston, extremely good side, went away and won the second semi. So we've gone back to a pre-final and we played our nemesis in Ulverston. There was a lot of rivalry between Ulverston. You know, we'd lost Darren Benham to Ulverston, Jeremy Soden to Ulverston and Trent McCrossan to Ulverston. And we came up in a pre-final to Latrobe. And I knew that, Christ, we've got to have to do something here. Hazelwood had a thumb injury. McDonald done his knee in the second semi-final. He was out for the year. McDonald that year played for Tasmania. Clements was gone with the hamstrings. We lost some really good players. Mm. And no excuse. Ulverston, well drilled, played for their club, and they beat us in the pre-final. So we were a little bit like Creedence Clearwater. We went straight out the back door. Mm. And that really took it out of me. That was the end of 2007. And I can remember, some say that they've heard some really good sprays, but I can remember ripping my shirt off and jumper off at half-time in that game and going clean off. But there was no response. We were gone. We were cooked. Ulverston were a terrific side. So Ulverston going into that grand final, clear underdogs. But, geez, it was a good game. Ulverston coached well by Max and they plastered up. I think it might have been 10, 11 points. It was a great game of footy. And I watched that and I said, we weren't up to that level.
Yep.
So we played our good, previously in finals, we'd played good football, but that final series, we just weren't at our best.
Yep. So you say you gave a spray at the end of 07. Do you think that might have been a build-up of the pressure from the last few years and the expectation and that sort of thing? Did that play into it at all? Or were you just trying something different?
It was a build-up. And yep. And I did say after the game, after 2007, I said, look, young Higgs, Kristen Higgs, I said, clubs will come at you, because we had clubs picking players, like plumbers coming at us. We were $775,000 in debt, remember, Brenda. We couldn't go out and recruit big players. Mm. We had to produce our own, and we did that very well. But clubs around the area used to come in and pick our good young kids. And I just said to, I can remember saying to Christian Higgs after the game, you know, I hope you stay here next year because there'll be clubs coming for you. You know, you've got to stick together. And look, within 2 weeks, I went and seen the power broke for Deb Ward and said, look, you know, it's time that I moved on. And look, it was that for a long time, I was not broken, but empty. It was disappointing.
Yep. This is, you talk about the time after you left.
It was. I lost something that I probably still haven't found yet. And I don't mean to be sentimental, but that's what happens. Yep. That's what happens. In, you give so much, just like the players. I'm quite sure that the players that played in those 3 losing grand finals would feel the same. It's just something you can't get back.
Yep, yep. So even the success that you did have later on, which we'll talk about, so that still doesn't replace those losses?
Not really, no. Look, unfortunately, I got eight sides to grand final at senior level. And unfortunately, I only won 3. Should have won 5, but won 3. But look, hey, if I live to 80 and I'm sitting in the sun with a rug over me reading the Herald Sun, and all I've got to worry about is that you lost some grand finals, then I've had a pretty good life.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, things that happen later on probably change your perspective on life, which again we'll get into as well. But just as I say, just talk about that, I suppose, the pressure. Did it build over those couple of years with going into new grand finals? Did you feel that, or are you someone that can just put that aside?
Oh, no, I felt the pressure. Yep. I heard the drums beat, and look, at that particular time, and this is what I respect about Kurt Byard, Devon Port are winning premierships, but no one hates them. When I coached Devon Port, we were losing grand finals, and everyone rejoiced.
Yep.
Everyone hated us.
You could feel that?
Oh, I could, because I was a coach. Yep. I was outspoken. I didn't sit on the fence. And look, at the end of the day, I was part of a lot of work with a lot of people. We got Devonport back to being relevant. So if you hated Devonport, you were doing something right.
Yep.
But, you know, that's... You know, I did hear the drums beat, and look, that put more pressure on me, but, you know, I didn't like to show up, but inside, it certainly did. You know, the wife was the only one that used to sit at the end of the bed after it come home from a grand final loss. You know, some of those were, you know, really hard, because, you know, I knew that there was an incident after the 2005 grand final when we were beaten by Burnie from some very senior players from other clubs that carried on a treat. But to those players' credit, they each rang me over the next couple of weeks and apologised. And it's great to see that two of those guys are coaching at a very, very high level. Higher level than I've ever coached at.
Yep.
So, you know, and that's how people hated Devonport. And look, more than likely it was because I was the head coach.
Yep. Yep. So sometimes, you know, your greatest strength can also be a weakness because you were sort of outspoken and spoke your mind. It sort of backfired in some instances as well.
And hence the reason why you were a little bit hesitant to approach me, because people see me on a Saturday. It's not who I am. I'm a coach.
Yep.
But I'm a completely different man when I jump in my car and get home.
Yep.
Well, I like to think I am anyway.
We'll have to ask your wife. We'll get her on the next pod, Ned. So you talk about that it did rock you and knock you around when you left in 07. Like the quote that you gave me was that you couldn't get the club that you followed as a kid to a flag. So what sort of hole did it put you in, and how long did it take you to come out of it?
All my life I wanted to be a premiership player at Devonport. All my life. That was my dream. And to win a Burnie Mile. And to be able to coach a club that I played with and I followed, it was a dream come true. Not many people get to do that. And look, when I first started, you know, I didn't have the 250-game career or 6 best and fairest that a lot of other players have and got coaching roles. But I remember Neil Cummings said to me, now Neil Cummings played for Tasmania, played for Glenorchy, he was a state player, great player. He said, you're as good as any coach that I've played under. Now, we played under Gary Davison, played under those guys in Oba. He said, because you've got a good imagination and you believe in yourself, so you've just got to keep doing that. And that really helped me get through. Yep. But, 2008 was a really tough year for me, because I did enjoy it. I wasn't coaching. I used to go and watch games of footy and that. But end of 2007, I was tired, I was disappointed, but I was really grateful for the break.
Yeah, yeah. And so during that time, so where did coaching sit? Were you always going to get back into it, or was there a time when you thought, no, I'm done?
I was done. I was done with the politics of footy. And I've sorted it out with Dad. When Darren Banham left Devonport, that broke my heart. That was the start of something that just took something out of me, because Darren Banham, a great player, one of the best players I've coached. I love Darren Banham, and we've commentated together over the last couple of years. Good mates. I only spoke to Darren Banham last week. But when he left, it was the start of what I consider, for me, things just kept them going out of me. And I just needed the rest, but the politics, you know, sponsors, and it was really hard. As I said to you before, a coach at this level, it's tough. It's, you know, you're out with a meal with family and friends, and you're not really engaged with who you're with. It's, how's his hamstring? What, how am I going to tell him he's going to be omitted? Who kicked the goal for lots? It's never ending.
Yeah, yeah. And during that time, though, so you still did sink your teeth into a few things, because you were still a rep coach that year, weren't you?
Well, I was fortunate enough to get a call from the NFL to see whether I would coach the Tasmanian under 23 side.
Yep.
And coach the Northwest Football League. And I just said, look, I don't know whether I've got the time to do both jobs.
Yeah.
He said, look, that 1 weekend the state side plays, and the next weekend the rep side plays. But I love rep footy, and I love putting on the maroon and gold. I love being involved with rep footy on the coast. And I said, look, I'll coach the representative side in NWFL, and I said, I'll get hold of Kent Jackson, and we can work together. So I rang Kent up, and Kent coached the Tasmanian under 23 side. I used to love working with Kent because he's so positive. Kent was probably one of the most positive people that I've been involved in. Always seen the positive out of everything. So Kent coached the under 23 side, and I was an assistant coach. And then I coached the NWFL side, and Kent was an assistant coach to me. So that's how it transpired. And then at the end of 08, that same year, I went away to Ireland with the Australian under 23 side as an assistant coach.
Yep.
And looked, it was a really wonderful experience. And that's when I wanted to get back into coaching.
Yep.
So I applied for a job. But never heard back from him. So, and then I got a phone call from...
Were you surprised that you didn't hear back from
him? Not really.
Okay.
Not really.
Yeah. So you thought you'd be long odds to get it?
Rivalry between the two sides.
Oh, okay.
Two towns. Yep. Town versus town versus town. Anyway, that was fine. We're off the Ducks back to me. Justin Pratt rang me. Justin was a coach of Burnie. And so I went down there as director of coaching in 2009, worked with Plappy at Burnie. It was the first time, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to probably get myself in a bit of trouble again.
Yep.
It was the first time in my football career where I went to Justin halfway through here and said, mate, I'm done, I can't finish this. There are things going on here that I've never seen or witnessed before in my footy career. Justin, that year, we were beaten on the last kick of the day. Justin had a shot for goal 25 metres out to beat Clarence at Aurora Stadium, or York Park back then. Didn't kick it. Now, and he went through a lot of drama that year from people that he thought he could trust. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. And, yeah, that was a year. But I got to see how Kay Bundy operated, and Nick McKenna and Big Brad Davis. They were awesome people. Yep. To get to know, and just to watch them, how they went about football, it just gave me another perspective.
Yeah, you can take learnings from anything, coach, can't you?
And I learned from Justin Platt, you know, the thing that he taught me was, you know, you don't have to win every fight. You need to win the fights that count.
Yeah.
And I always kept that in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
It was a really good line that Plappy gave.
That's the end of part A with Ned Perry, and there was so much in this chat we've decided to make it into a two-parter. But don't go anywhere and get stuck straight into part B. You're going to love it.